Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Clay Travis joins us now. He's presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, what's up, man?
Not much, boys. Hope you guys are doing well. Looking forward to Memorial Day weekend.
So, Clay, you're no longer really a member of the Nashville media, but you were a member of Nashville media for a while, and you still follow teams in this state. We're going to get into this topic a little bit later, but what do you think? Is Nashville sports media soft compared to other markets you're in?
I think that there is a degree of softness, and I think for certain people, depending on what their generation is, I think that's partly because people are still so thrilled to have pro sports in Nashville, and I think that translates into the way the teams are covered. Certainly, I think I've talked about this back when I did the show. My dad, for instance, is 74, like around your dad's age, Withrow, and I imagine, and you too, Hutton, like, if you talk with your dad about Nashville having pro sports, there's probably an element of them that still is in disbelief that the city they grew up in, if they grew up here, has an NFL team and has a hockey team, and soon will have an MLS team, and maybe one day will have a Major League Baseball team. I think they're kind of in awe over the fact that pro sports are here. And then I would say people of my generation, and I'm 40 and certainly younger, who have grown up in Nashville, kind of feel to a certain extent like, you know what, the pro sports teams are fortunate to be here because we've got a great community and they get the opportunity to make a living in this community. And I think that's probably the difference in the way that people will think. And so I think it's somewhat generational. The younger you are, I think probably the more you are of the belief that people should be tougher on them. The older that you are, and this is generalized, I think the more you are just excited that they're here.
I think conflict, Clay, makes people uncomfortable if they're involved in it, but everyone tunes in for it. I mean, reality TV. TV nowadays, I mean, if you turn on Bravo, that's all it is. And the ratings for those Real Housewives shows are through the roof right now because people just love the drama of it. I think that's why.
But someone has to have the conflict to entertain other people. So
yes.
Someone's got to be uncomfortable at some point.
Well, that's what I always say. Like, I want my personal life to be as drama-free as possible, but I want everyone else's personal life to be as dramatic as possible, right? Like, I want the enjoyment of other people's drama, but I don't really want drama in my own life. Does that make sense?
Some people
who are like, every guy out there has dated a girl that is an absolute drama queen. And I know there are drama kings too, but you know, like you're dating her and it's like she thrives on conflict. It's like she thrives on there being a perpetual enemy and everything else. And if you're actually in a relationship with those people, it's exhausting, but it's fun kind of to be friends with those people, right? If you're not in the relationship, or at least kind of watch them from afar. And certainly that's like the business model of, you know, before the internet came along, it was the Us Weeklies of the world. You know, you go through the checkout line at the supermarket and everybody famous is about to get divorced. They're cheating on somebody. They've got some drama in their life and we all secretly like it. I mean, you know, a television show without drama would be one that people didn't watch. And a radio show without conflict at some point in time is a really boring radio show, right? We all want to pick sides,
right?
And really, that's what sports is. If you're not choosing a side in a sporting event, you're probably not watching. You know, the most loved and hated sports teams are the ones that get watched the most.
You've started a podcast, first episode with Jason Whitlock. I'm amazed you find the time for it based on how much is already on your docket. And I'm wondering, as such a guy with such a handle on content production, if you worry if there's ever a time where your own content will compete with your other content.
Yeah, I think it's possible I'm there. And that's honestly, it might be that 5 years from now, I only do a podcast. I'm going to kind of let the market tell me where the money is, for lack of a better term, because I think about that all the time. I do 3 hours of daily radio, 15 hours a week, Periscope and Facebook shows. I'm, you know, just published a mailbag this morning, lots of written content. The Jason Whitlock podcast you referenced is 2 hours and 47 minutes.
Whoa.
It's like The Godfather.
Wow. That is too long, Chief.
But my thought is with the podcast, in all honesty, I feel like what I do now is oftentimes outside of the books is oftentimes all reactive to the 24 hours before. Television and radio basically exist to react to what's happening right now. And my goal with the podcast that we're starting this week is to potentially create something that would be just as good to listen to 5 years or 10 years from now as it would be today. So my hope is that that these are kind of evergreen in a way that that other things I'm creating are not. So but yeah, look, I mean, I think advertisers will tell us. If I was getting up insanely early, and when I look at the revenue that's being produced by The Ringer, for instance, the Wall Street Journal had a front page article during the Super Bowl. None of those people who are doing Ringer podcasts were up at 5:30 in the morning on Radio Row at the Super Bowl like I was. So, I want to make as much money doing as little of work as I can. I mean, I think that's kind of the American dream, right? So if it turns out that I could do a 1 hour podcast 3 days a week and make more money than I do doing 15 hours of live radio, I'll make the switch. I also think that you don't know what the market's going to react. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. I think it's harder to do 15 hours of live radio, certainly solo, but harder to do 15 hours of live radio as a part of a group than it would be to do 3 hours of podcasts. But right now, the amount of money being brought in on podcasting is far in excess. And so it seems like a fundamental misvaluation of talent, because I think there are people making a lot of money off podcasting if they have a successful podcast that I don't think would be able to do a 15-hour a week radio show. And I'll give you an example. I listen to Bill Simmons' podcast occasionally. I don't think Bill Simmons could do a 15-hour a week radio show. I don't think he could do what I do, what Colin Cowherd does, what Dan Patrick does. And that's not a knock on Bill Simmons. I mean, he's a very talented guy. But if he's making $10 million a year on his podcast, I don't think anybody's making $10 million a year on their radio program right now. So to me, that
unless your name's Howard Stern,
is fundamentally misvaluing radio as it pertains to podcasts. And not only that, that the talent, like I think easily I could do 3 hours a week of podcast. I think it would be infinitely easier than doing 15 hours a week of radio. If I could make more money doing that than 15 hours of radio, that's where I should go. So this is kind of a test on that to see how the market responds.
Well, and you're unedited.
Yeah, the podcast, you don't have to worry. And not only are you unedited, it's not live. If you do a crappy segment, you just take it out before you put it up with the podcast, right? I mean, you could do multiple versions of an open until you absolutely nailed it. Or, you know, you don't have to worry about you know, what you guys and I certainly have to worry about, which is when it's when the NBA Finals end. I mean, there's 2 months where virtually nothing's going on, and we still got 15 hours a week to do. You know, I mean, anybody who's ever hosted a daily radio show or anybody who's ever listened to one knows that the topics in mid-July are a lot tougher than the topics in mid-October. And so you can do less, right? You could just be like, hey, I'm going to take the month of July off. There's not much going on. Or you only have to do an hour a week or whatever it is. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Everything is valued on CPMs. And that's basically a cost per impression number. A lot of these podcasts right now are getting $50 per CPM. $50. And many different radio shows are pricing their CPMs at $3 or $4 a CPM. So, I mean, fundamentally, I mean, there may be something where radio has to realign and start doing a lot fewer ads and charging a lot more money for them. Or, you know, maybe the truth is that that the radio medium is going to be surpassed in substantial ways by the podcast medium. I don't know, but you know, I'm always been experimental in terms of the business side of what we do. So Plus, I enjoy it. Like, I like that I can just sit down and have a conversation. I don't have to worry about it. It can go a long time. And as long as I'm interested, maybe other people will be too.
Clay, are you intrigued? Is it entertaining to watch Drake and everything going on with the Raptors and his fandom?
Well, I think it's intriguing because there's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
we're talking more about chugging beers with Aaron Rodgers than we are the game last night.
Yeah, I thought it was a really entertaining game. I mean, yeah. I'm intrigued to see who's going to advance. I mean, I think the Warriors are going to win in 5 or 6 games, maybe less. It wouldn't stun me if they sweep based on the way they played so far. But it has certainly been pretty fun to watch. And like a lot of people, I think, I'm just looking for something good in the world of sports to be on television this time of year. And so I enjoyed that. I was disappointed in Aaron Rodgers' beer chugging capabilities, but I was impressed by his Game of Thrones analysis. So I guess you gain one, you lose one there.
So his Game of Thrones analysis, he didn't hold back. He was not thrilled with the ending. You were not thrilled with the ending. Could it have gone much worse in this final season from your viewpoint, Clay?
I don't think so. Not when you consider the amount of money at stake. I think in general, they kind of got seduced by the big spectacle moment and kind of lost the smaller moments that made the show so powerful. And the easy analogy I've made is they went from Game of Thrones being effectively a game of chess where you were constantly trying to figure out the motivations and decision-making of characters as they pursued the ultimate prize to a game of Uno. You know, where like you just pull your hand up and you're like, oh, you know, I win because I happen to have kind of the better draw than somebody else. Maybe there's, you know, greatest Uno players in the world are really the equivalent of chess grandmasters. But I would have my doubts that that's the case. I think there's a lot of luck of draw. And ultimately, you know, I think that was the part that was unfulfilling because, you know, there were melodramatic moments that were absurd, but you could always balance them out for people who didn't watch the show, pointing to times when the show was truly transcendent, incredible television. And I did not think we had very many of those moments in season 8.
So there's one spinoff that's a prequel 500 years or so in the past that's already in production. There's 3 other spinoffs that are being planned right now by HBO. Clay, if they did a spinoff of a current character based on the way the series ended, what is the most interesting spinoff series if they follow one of the characters?
I think the most likely one is Arya. I think that to me, still the most interesting one would be. I mean, look, I would care about the person who's sitting on the Iron Throne, right? I mean, I don't need this show to end. I would be enjoy like the. I don't know if you've heard this, but this is a potentially crazy spoiler. The guy who told us the final parts of the guy who leaked all the way that the show was going to end said there was a scene film that they decided not to include that explained what Drogon was doing with Daenerys' body and that he was flying her to a high priestess that had pledged loyalty to Daenerys and that there was the possibility of her resurrecting Daenerys like Jon Snow had been resurrected. And so you can imagine if the final scene had been, say, suddenly Daenerys' eyes popping open, how people would have been like, wow, I think that would have been a lot more interesting, right? If the dragon puts her down in the final scene, if suddenly her eyes pop open. I think the way that show was left, that there is almost 100% chance that not just an individual character, but everybody will eventually return for more Game of Thrones. And even Tyrion hinted at it when Jon Snow said, hey, did I do the right thing? And he said, ask me in 10 years. It's almost like they're letting you know that, hey, in the years ahead, we're going to have to circle back around and see how this went. And I think, you know, if you watch Game of Thrones, the idea that the way it was left, Sansa decides to take the North out on a kingdom by her own, that the other 6 kingdoms are going to be okay with this, or that Bran is somehow going to rule without someone challenging his throne, is fundamentally the exact opposite of what the entire show was based upon.
Clay, and for those that don't even watch Game of Thrones, I think they can relate to this in some way. Everybody has a price. I get that. But as an author, Paul, chime in on this too. if you wrote this series of books and then you didn't finish the series, why would you let HBO finish the series for you if you're George R.R. Martin? I find that fascinating that he just gave up the books and said, yeah, go ahead and finish whatever you want. And well, more people will follow the ending of that show than they will his final book if he ever gets around to writing it.
He has a blog, and I went and read his blog after the final episode aired, George R.R. Martin does, and he said his final two books he thinks will take 3,000 pages, and there will be substantial differences.
That blog, by the way, Clay, I read it too. That was as clear as mud. The way I didn't know if he liked the ending, if he hated it, when the books are going to come out. He talked about another book, The Promise of Spring or something, would be the book after this next one. It was very strange.
So here's what I would say in general. I would say that, first of all, it's possible that they ended Game of Thrones before George R.R. Martin will end his version of Game of Thrones, right? That his ending will be different because it might go further than where they ended the show. And then they would have a reason to come back and extend for another couple of years, potentially Game of Thrones, right? So, but my position in general is, I think that oftentimes when you write books, and I've written a few, so I've had an idea, you can have a plan of where you think it's going to end, but the writing process ultimately directs you to an ending, and oftentimes it's different than where you anticipate. So even with George R.R. Martin, if I were him, I would take the books beyond where this series ended, because then it gives you final say on what happens. But the challenge in general, George Lucas saw this with Star Wars, I think we've seen it certainly with all the Marvel characters, is at some point your creation becomes bigger than you are. And as the creator, you don't own it anymore, and it turns into a question of Warner Media owns this. Are they going to have any HBO show that is remotely as popular as Game of Thrones for the next 5 to 7 years? My guess would be no. And so at some point, what do? You give the public more of what they've already established that they like. And that's why I think Game of Thrones will continue. And also, I think these characters, I don't think these characters are going to go out. I think they have dreams right now of having acting careers where they have something that is as good or more popular than this. But I don't think any of these people are going to turn into Harrison Ford. I think this is probably the height of their career. That's not a negative.
Right.
It's just that at some point you want that height to occur again. I mean, look, they're redoing Beverly Hills 90210. None of those guys have ever done anything bigger than what they did there. And they're doing like their fourth different remake of Beverly Hills 90210 now. At some point, I think they'll all come back.
Clay, your first guest was Jason Whitlock on your podcast. And I know you don't do anything just at random. How did you choose him? And who were the other candidates for your first guest on the podcast?
Well, we've got a bunch of them already lined up. And so the goal of the podcast is to have sports, media, business, and politics, like find people that I think are interesting and just have long conversations with them. With the concept being, I think we focus a lot on wins, in sports and in society in general, but oftentimes it's the losses where you can learn the most. And I also think it's more instructive to people out there. You know, we're a society that spends a lot of time focusing on success, but we don't necessarily focus on the failure that can lead to success. And certainly I've failed a lot in my life. The big part of as I get older, I believe that failure happens more often because people are not willing to take risks than it does because they actually fail. A big part of this exploration is going to be not just how did you end up in a place where, you know, you are a quote unquote in quotation mark success, but what were some of the pratfalls? What were some of the major losses that you had along the way that has helped to get you to where you are? I think that's something that people need to hear. Because again, a lot of people want to just look at the final product and assume that it was, that there were no challenges along the way or that there were no disastrous setbacks along the way. And for virtually anybody I know who's ever been successful, they have had some unbelievable failures along that process too.
Clay Travis, follow him on Twitter at Clay Travis at Outkick. Clay, appreciate it. Enjoy the long weekend and we'll catch up next week, man.
Yeah, y'all have a good Memorial Day weekend as well. Hope everybody has a good time and talk to you next week.
All right, later. Clay Travis, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com.